You're listening to Sacks in the Basement, a production of the Broadcast Basement Limited, where every show is 30 minutes of good and comes from a basement bar on the south side of Chicago. Pull up a stool, pour a cold one, and join us right now for Sacks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at sacksinthebasement.com. There's an awful lot of White Sox fans that are really mad with John Schriffen because in the heat of the moment, when Andrew Benintendi had two home runs after just sucking all year long, and the White Sox walked off after barely winning, I think that was when they finally used all the fingers on your right hand to count up all the wins. Right. In a terrible season, he got really excited. It was a great call, by the way. He does the South Side stand-up thing. It's already a hashtag. He's very excited. I'm sure he'll have a sponsorship deal over it. And then he does the phrase for all the haters. And people lost their damn minds over it. And the thing is, he's doubled down on it now because that's what the White Sox do. The White Sox love to shame their fan base. Like, I don't believe he was shaming his fan base when he first said it. But somebody within the White Sox PR department is saying, we need to make these people feel guilty for not being at the ballpark. Because it's better at the ballpark, right? So I think this is going to morph into something different than what it was intended during the call. But I will tell you this. I firmly believe that John Schriffen is not ripping White Sox fans. Because calling people haters and ripping White Sox fans, when you are a hired broadcasting gun that specialized in basketball and has barely been on the South Side, this guy, no street cred whatsoever, right? No, he doesn't have the right to pick on White Sox fans. He hasn't earned the right to pick on White Sox fans, and that's why I don't believe that's what he's doing, because that would be the stupidest thing that he could possibly do. So I don't think it's possible that he's doing that, right? Because think about this. Every other White Sox announcer for years would either be a trained broadcaster that was around the team forever, right? Even dating back to Harry Carey when he was here, right? Or John Rooney on the radio, right? And then you have all these ex-players that have come through, people that have the respect of the team who have been around the team. You got a diehard fan in Jason Benetti whose dream job was talking about the Chicago White Sox, right? You've got Hawk Harrelson who was always around the team. You got Hawk and Wimpy. Anybody who's ever commentated on the White Sox has a history with the team and you could not question their fandom of it. I could question the fandom of Schriffen. He's just a guy who was looking for a job and got one of the dream jobs in this world, which is broadcasting baseball at a major league level. So I highly doubt, because of how stupid it would be, that he's picking on White Sox fans. I just want to start the show off saying that.
I think you've probably spent more oxygen on this than is really needed, but this is the problem with being a White Sox fan right now, too, is we're all so paranoid about the organization hating us that when he says something like that, that's our first thought is, hey, he's talking about me. I like the team. I've had a campfire milkshake. I want campfire and milkshake to replace Southpaw as our mascots. No. When you're the worst team in Major League Baseball and everybody is writing you off and everyone is saying that this team is just going to suck, there's no hope for this team, you're never going to win ball games, you have no capability of going on a run. It's universal across Major League Baseball that the White Sox are a laughingstock right now, which means that, yes, there are nationwide, there are haters. Also, the White Sox, in case Sox fans haven't been paranoid enough about that, tend to get written off on the national stage anyway. Remember the whole ESPN kind of forgets the 2005 World Series ever existed kind of a thing? We have the right to be paranoid on the national stage. And honestly, when I heard it, my first thought was, yeah, screw you to the rest of the American League. Screw you to the rest of major leagues. This team is capable of having some pride, of winning some ball games, of walking some guys off, of doing it to a team that in the Rays that is held in very high esteem and regard because they're an East Coast team, right? They're in the mighty AL East where gods are forged, and we're in the Midwest where, you know, we're all covered in cow crap as far as New York is concerned. So it's one of those where it's like, you know, when you're saying for all the haters, no, he's not talking about the fans that haven't gone to the ballpark.
He can't be talking about us, right? Like, I mean, he can't be talking about us. He can't be talking about those that love and cover the team and say things like, you know, Pedro Grifol's a bad manager when he is, or that this team is not constructed to win anything, which it isn't, or that the owner is cheap and
has
plenty of money to spend, but he doesn't spend it. And he's been quoted as saying that he would prefer to come in second because it's a carrot for the fan base. Like, if we're criticizing things that are based in fact, you know, I believe David Sampson. I do. I mean, he was an MLB executive, and he was on this show, and he repeated that right here on this program. Okay.
In very graphic detail about how and when it happened.
Oh, very graphic detail. Like he was able to talk about what he was drinking at the moment, I believe. When Jerry said it, he was able to describe the scene to a T. It didn't sound like a made up thing to me. Right. So I know he's not talking about those who are critical and have a reason to be critical. And
no,
so I'm just saying I didn't take offense to it when it happened. So unless I'm crazy and he's way out of pocket, I don't think it's about White Sox fans.
No, because there's a difference between hating and there's a difference between criticizing. Okay. When we criticize the White Sox, and I'm just going to say this, when we criticize the White Sox and we criticize Jerry Reinsdorf and Pedro Grifol, we're doing it not because we hate the team or we just don't think that they're worth our time. What kind of petty jerks would we have to be to devote this much time and effort to just bashing the team if we didn't like them, if we didn't want them to do well? Right. I mean, come on. That's psychopathic to think that's what we are.
I have something like 10 podcasts on the network. If I really hated the team, I'd turn this one off. Okay.
Exactly.
I love doing this. And you know what I love?
I have a career outside of this that has made me just fine. I do just fine doing that. If I didn't do this, you know what I'd be doing? I'd be calling you and talking about the same thing just without a microphone. Okay. I'd still be sitting at your bar. We'd still be having these conversations. We just, you know, wouldn't have fine sponsors like Cork and Carry at the Bark.
Award-winning burgers, ballpark favorites, spirits, wines, the latest in craft beer, a beautiful bar, indoor, outdoor seating. Bring the whole family before the game. Get over there afterwards, especially if they win for the big party. But we don't need a win to party at Cork and Carry at the Park in the shadow of the ballpark at 33rd in Princeton, the proud sponsors of Sox in the Basement. See more at corkandcarry.com. The Chicago Fam Sox are 3-1 right now. Won the first three since Tommy Pham joined the team. Lost Tuesday night, but they were competitive. One run. Lost it at the end. It was close at least.
Right.
Pedro's Campfire White Sox milkshakes are currently 3-24.
Right.
Now, Tommy Pham, a professional baseball player.
Yes, a guy who's been on winning teams.
Right. Sat down after the first three games because Pedro needs to take care of him. Somebody needs to explain to Pedro that Tommy will tell him when he needs a break. I would have preferred him saying Tommy felt like he needed a break because of the spring training thing and we're giving it to him. I would have been like, cool, makes perfect sense. Okay, now maybe he's protecting him by not saying that it was Tommy they wanted to do it, but I doubt that he was winded after three games. He looks like a gamer who's ready to go. And you need more guys like Tommy Pham on this team in future years. Like next year, we've talked about it. The four free agent bats that they could add if the pitching comes along through the minors that could flip this team quickly into a team that will legitimately contend for the postseason. If you could just add some bats and spend some money, which will be available because you're going to have about $40 million on the books after you clear Moncada and you clear Aloy and you go, okay, it's time to replace some bats, go out, headhunt. It's a good class of bats that will be available next year. You should be able to get plenty of guys. You should be able to get a Tommy Pham who is at a reasonable price, can bat up towards the top of your order. And here's what I love about him. And this is why you need more guys like this. This is a guy who, when asked why he didn't go to the Padres who wanted him, said they wouldn't pay as much money as the White Sox. Now, some people are like, oh, he doesn't want to win. I don't care. I want guys like Tommy Pham. I want a guy who's in the business of himself. This is the thing I've been yelling about for years when the White Sox send out those surveys like, how connected do you feel to Tim Anderson? I don't care. Make him hit again. I never cared about that. What I wanted were guys that were hungry to play well. Tommy Pham goes from team to team to team, and he sees himself as a business. And he told the Padres, yeah, I'll show up, but I need money. And they were like, but don't you want to win? And he was like, no, I just want money. And you know what he's going to do next year? He's going to play for whoever gives him the most amount of money. And I'm totally fine with that because you know what he's going to be for you this year? He is going to answer the bell all the time. Hangnails are not going to put him on the bench. He is not going to the IL, and you're not going to accuse him of being made out of glass. If he goes to the IL, he is going to be legit injured. And I bet you he hides it for a while because he needs to keep his numbers up because he wants to make more money next year because he's going to play next year. I guarantee it. That's what a guy like that is like. His hunger is to go in, win ball games, be good, and make money. And I want more ball players like that, Ed. This team has just been filled up with a bunch of guys that are promise and are soft. I'm sorry, soft in a way where they're constantly getting hurt and soft in a way where mentally everything starts to go bad and it just snowballs for them. Tommy Pham, he walks right in, spark, boom, everybody starts winning. Okay? Because Tommy Pham don't care. And Pedro even talked about it. He's just a guy who goes in and he just like works his butt off and he's like a robot and he's in the cage and he does his job and he's focused from the moment he walks into the ballpark to the moment he walks out. That shouldn't be a surprise to you. It shouldn't be, wow, it's cool to have one guy like that. That should be all the guys on your team. So when you think I'm crazy when I'm on this show and I say, next year you're going to have $40 million and if you can find some pitching and you can bring up some of these guys down there, and you can drop down some of these players that you're batting up too high in your order, and you can replace some of the bad hitters with professional baseball players that will be on the market for 1 or 2 year deals that you can just go out and sign to fix your lineup and get a better manager, of course. And don't think I'm crazy. It's there. And it won't matter whether or not the White Sox lost a bunch of games last year or what their chances are in the preseason. You find guys with Tommy Pham's mentality and you sign those guys. And that's the type of player that I haven't seen on the South Side in a long time. Sox in the Basement listeners, switch to a new age of life. High at Home Medical Equipment wants to help you keep mom and dad, grandma and grandpa out of assisted living, make it so they can get around on their own, live independently. Stair lifts, ramps, grab bars, lift chairs, even a bathroom remodeling may be in order, and Hyatt can help you with that. They work with insurance and have 0% financing for qualified individuals. They also have the latest and greatest in CPAP machines. They'll even mail supplies for the machine directly to you, and they have the latest and greatest in continuous glucose monitors. It's all at Hyatt Home Medical Equipment. Learn more at HHME.com.
There's an aspect of this where everybody assumes that when you go into a rebuild, right, you're looking for the guys that are going to be here for the next 10 years. And the Sox were lauded in some ways for doing things like signing long-term contracts for prospects and for guys that were in their early stages of their careers to avoid arbitration, to make it more team-friendly. And there is something to be said from a business standpoint about that. But the flip side of it that, too, is this team had historically just handed out jobs on a timeline that they felt was right. Andrew Vaughn being the poster child for a guy who was given a job. We were told in 2021, Andrew Vaughn is going to be on this team. He's going to be part of the mix somehow. DH, first base. We're going to make him an outfielder, whatever we're going to do. Andrew Vaughn is here. He has arrived. And in the years since, he's struggled. And he is right now, he looks lost. I mean, I know he came around the other day and he had a good game, and I expect he will have some good games here and there, but you can't tell me Andrew Vaughn is what Andrew Vaughn was supposed to be. Andrew Vaughn never had the need to try and earn it. Andrew Vaughn is not currently playing for a contract because he still has team control. There's a lot to be said about getting a guy hungry, okay, and making guys hungry. And we talked about this even in the preseason with bringing in some of these low-end veterans that are going to try and play for their next contract and making them hungry. Now, it doesn't always work out because sometimes talent or lack thereof hurts you. But Paul DeJong, for example, is not having the worst season he's ever had because Paul DeJong is at the end of his career. If he doesn't perform in some way, shape, or form this year and prove to another team or to the White Sox that he belongs somewhere, okay? Danny Mendick is very much in that mold right now as well. I don't know why Nicky Lopez doesn't seem to have that fire, but whatever. But having all these veterans and having all these guys who are at the end of their line, and I include Gavin Sheets in that. To a certain degree, I include Aloy Jimenez in that.
Gavin Sheets has a fire because he was told by everyone he wasn't even making the team.
And that's what I mean, okay? And Gavin Sheets is where Tommy Pham is to a certain degree. He's just younger, okay? But he still, he is playing to prove that he belongs in the major leagues. Tommy Pham is playing to prove that he should have an age 37 season.
I would point that the reason that Gavin Sheets is different right now, I would submit that the reason things are different with Gavin Sheets, at least to date as we enter May, is that in previous years, he was just brought up and you were told he could play outfield. He tried it for a few games down in the minors and he was thrown out there and it didn't matter, right? Like, he was just there. Had he done anything to really earn it? He hadn't done anything to really earn it, but he was just there. And the first time it was, you haven't earned anything, kid. And if you don't do exactly what you need to do to make this team perform at a high level, you won't be on a baseball team anymore. The pressure turned the coal into kind of a diamond, at least at the beginning. The pressure of Tommy Pham having to find a job next year makes him a valuable player out there. There has never been that on Andrew Vaughn. It's why I think this team should send him down with an option and make him work out his stuff and prove that he belongs back on the squad.
Well, not only that, but there's also a player development aspect in here. And let's talk about Dominic Fletcher not being on the team right now. Dominic Fletcher started to figure it out a little bit. Then over the last week, he was dipping down. And Tommy Pham comes in. Fletcher can now go down and fix whatever it is, okay? The pressure getting to him, the fact that he was sort of a made guy when he got traded for and was brought here is like, hey, look at this. We saw what you did with the Diamondbacks last year. You're our guy now. Whatever it is, he kind of got himself a little out of sorts at the plate. So he can go down to Charlotte and he can refine his approach. He can figure out how he wants to attack things. He can get back to being Dominic Fletcher. And that's player development, right? That's taking a guy aside and sitting here saying, look, without the pressures of being in the major leagues and performing, or, you know, with the ability to sit here and execute because you're not facing the best of what baseball has to offer pitching wise on a day in and day out basis, you can get back a little bit of confidence. You can figure out what you want to do.
And that's the thing that I think is confusing to White Sox fans, because White Sox fans watched poor player development during the Han Williams era, especially during this last thing when we were going to all of a sudden load up our team and be the team of the 20s. Like they were just elevating guys and saying, well, he's a prospect who's on a list and go. And when it didn't work out, they would leave him out there and there'd be no accountability. I know a lot of people are like, well, it's a lost year. Give Dominic Fletcher at bats. I think we've seen what happens when you do that. And you don't say, hey, kid, you're just not cutting in the majors. Go down and work it out. I think that's far more effective. And I think he'll be back up here and he'll get another chance. And they want to see him playing well when he gets up there. I just feel like we tried it that way. We tried the idea of, well, it's a lost season. Just throw all the young guys out and give them experience. And without accountability for what they're doing, they flounder and they turn into Andrew Vaughn. And so I'm okay with treating him differently because the other way didn't work.
No, and that's where we have some peek into why Chris Getz is different than Rick Hahn in the previous regime, is that there really wasn't a full-on lost year for the White Sox. There was always these, we're gonna get a chance to see what this guy can do. Here's Yoan Moncada. Let's play him at second base, a position he doesn't play particularly well, and let's, you know, throw him in there and see what he can do with the bat. And if you recall, that first season of Yoan Moncada was a disaster. He couldn't field and he couldn't hit. And then the next year, yeah, he came back and had his best season, but that was also the happy fun ball era. So we've seen that there's some question marks about that as well. But Gavin Sheets, being a guy that was told you're not making the team unless you force your way onto it, and so far to this point has performed well enough to stick around and play for his major league career, is a good example of how player development can work in the reverse and not sitting there saying, let these guys get attuned to major league pitching. Dominic Fletcher has seen major league pitching. He's got about, 50 games under his belt, somewhere in there. So it's not like he hasn't seen major league pitching, and he's had success. But get him back up here and let him figure out what he's supposed to do. Oscar Colas is in the same thing, okay? And if you're really just going to subscribe to that, then why is Colson Montgomery in Charlotte anyway? Just have him up here. So, this doesn't make sense. It makes a lot more sense to sit there and say, let's figure out what we have in the retreads here. Let's figure out what we have in veterans and let our guys work on their stuff and be refined, ready to go players with the next time they come back up so that they never have to go back down. The next time Dominic Fletcher comes up should be the last time he goes between Charlotte and Chicago unless he's going on vacation in the winter. Okay.
I think you could actually make the argument that the way that they handled Corey Lee, even if it wasn't intentional, it might have just been because Stassi got hurt. But the way that they dealt with Corey Lee, where he didn't have a job and he needed to prove himself to get up there. And then when the opportunity came, he probably was like, this is a fleeting opportunity. Stassi's going to get here. I've got to, there's a little pressure there, right? There's a little, okay, I did this before. I got to take my opportunity right now and run with it. And he has, to the point where, look, we yell about Pedro not using him, but I looked him up the other day, Lee, and he's only not been involved, I think, in like one or two games over the last eight of them. Like, he's had some pinch hits late in games. The one that he never saw, it was because it was a five-run victory for the White Sox. Like, he's coming in late for Maldonado suddenly. Like, it was stupid that they weren't doing it a month ago, but somehow one of the things we've been yelling about on this show, Pedro's finally doing, and he's getting more playing time. And what has it turned into? He's turned into a guy that there's at least some promise with what he's doing at the plate and behind the plate. And that came from the idea that he didn't have a guaranteed job, even though he was a first-round draft choice that was acquired in a trade in the hopes that he would be something for a young team. They didn't just give him the job. And by not just giving him the job and letting him find his opportunity, work his way back in, and have to give his utmost ability to make the team. And I guarantee you, he knows that if he falls off, he's leaving the team. And that's the thing. Like, remember when we had Jake Berger on last year? We had Jake Berger on the show last year. We talked to him. And we talked to his wife, too. And I think she might have even said the same thing in the interview when we talked to her about what was going on with all their social media and the way that they put themselves out there. But the idea that Jake knew this may be his last chance up there. Like, they were looking for any opportunity to send him down. He was never part of the plan at third base because Yoan had the contract and was the guy that was meant to be there. And there wasn't really a spot for him. So the only way he was going to stay was he had to prove himself and fight his way into the lineup. Nothing was handed to him. And then look how he thrived off it. He was the first guy supposedly in the cage. If he went 2-for-4, his wife was complaining to us that he doesn't leave the ballpark until the end because he goes, I need more cage work.
Right.
Because something didn't go right, even though he went 2-for-4 in the game. Like, and because he didn't want to go back to AAA. He even said it, and she said it, we expect to be back in Charlotte any day now because it's fleeting up here. And the feeling of it being fleeting and not being handed to him created a player who's now an everyday starter and somebody that fans sometimes go, I wish we wouldn't have given that guy away. And people in Miami, even though their team is terrible, appreciate as a hitter. And he's got an opportunity that he reached out and grabbed. I think there's something to be said for making prospects earn that final rung on the ladder instead of handing it to them. I think handing it to them and not giving them accountability is detrimental to them and it's detrimental to your team. And that's why I do support the idea of Fletcher being down in the minors to work out his stuff, even though this is a lost season, because I look at Andrew Vaughn and say somebody should have done it to him.
And it's the same thing with Nestrini. It's the same thing with Cannon. And back to Corey Lee for a second. Why was Pedro so committed to using Martin Maldonado, even though Maldonado, who cannot
do anything. He can't do anything well.
He can't do anything well at all. Why is he being used so much? Why is Corey Lee in such a battle with Martin Maldonado, this respected veteran who can't do it anymore? Why is Corey Lee being made to fight with it? Well, because Corey Lee's got to earn it, right? He's got to earn being above a guy that was brought in here to help mentor the pitching staff, being a guy who was brought in here as a guy who is somebody that the team can supposedly count on. Now, I think Maldonado would probably be the first to admit that, yeah, this year has not gone even remotely as good as his past years have gone, either behind the plate or at the plate. But nevertheless, you know, he had a fight off Max Stassi. Yeah, Stassi did him a favor by staying injured. But the thing is that there's also this idea, Chris Getz is not above going out and getting another backup catcher, another major league catcher who's on the fringes of being on a roster, but has a veteran presence about him. And he's done it now. He's brought in Tommy Pham late in the season. Robbie Grossman didn't show up until, you know, after spring training started. He's willing to go out and do this. Danny Mendick, okay, is up here now. He's willing to go out and do this, and he's willing to replace young guys with veterans, not because he's under any delusions that these veterans are going to get better. I don't think that that's what this is about. I think this is very much about player development. This is very much a guy who was a Major League Baseball player on the fringes. That's what Chris Getz was, okay? And he understands more than anybody that once you're here, if you don't fight for it, if you rest on your laurels, or if you let the pressure get to you and you don't perform, meaning you don't stick to your fundamentals, you don't stick to your approach at the plate, you don't stick to what got you here in the first place, that you are replaceable. And that's what he's trying to instill in the White Sox, who haven't done that really in the Jerry Reinsdorf era, because we were talking about it at the start of the show with John Schifrin. How many ambassadors, how many players get the opportunity to come back when Steve Stone takes his breaks? We have players come back that we sort of forgot were on the team sometimes, right? And you have this air of like, that's the one thing Jerry does, right? He keeps guys around that are company guys that really love the team and love the organization and wanted to be a part of it. And that's a beautiful thing to a certain degree. But for a lot of it, what it ends up happening is you get the Daryl Boston syndrome, okay? You get a job for life, even though you haven't necessarily done anything on a year-in and year-out basis.
Well, he had the whistle. That was really exciting.
I understand he had the whistle. I understand.
And he was a good spy in the dugout for Kenny to tell him what was going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, there was that.
Like,
I mean,
that was his guy. Like, how are the secrets in this manager's room getting out? And Daryl's just over in the corner whistling.
Right. You know, and that's what he did, right? He just whistled a happy tune.
Right.
And within it was buried a code of, you know, we have a problem with this player and this player. They don't like the manager, or the manager saying this about you behind your back.
Right.
So, but my point is that there's been a lot of eras of White Sox baseball in the Jerry Reinsdorf era where guys have gotten second and third and fourth and fifth chances and seemingly have a job for life. We even talked about Ethan Katz, for example, being brought along with this managerial regime, this coaching staff, even though he's a holdover from a prior coaching staff, or Don Cooper was the same way. And I understood Don Cooper had value because he had been able to do some really terrific things as a pitching coach. And that's why him going across different managers sort of made sense to a certain degree, but it's also very unusual. And to sit here and say that, you know, we're committed as a team to Eloy Jimenez after 5 years in the majors, after acquiring him in 2017, so 7 years in the organization, we're committed to him because we think that the best is yet to come. There's not a whole lot of credibility to that unless Eloy Jimenez starts performing on the field and stays healthy, right? To sit there and say Andrew Vaughn is one of our top prospects when he's been here for 3 years, okay, and he was drafted 5 years ago, and had that one lost season due to the pandemic, but also has not performed up to what you expect him to do. That's very unusual for a team to give a guy that length of rope, okay? Jared Walsh just got signed. Jared Walsh was a guy that was a very important player to the Angels until he wasn't. And then he started the season with the Rangers and was doing well until he wasn't. And guess what? That landed him on the street, because that's what these guys are. We're looking at a team of replacement guys who are going to be easily replaceable. And that, honestly, is not a bad thing. That's what Major League Baseball is. That's what the White Sox should have been this entire time. And with the exception of your stars, the guys that you really build around, the Luis Robert Juniors of the world, okay? You know, the Garrett Crochets maybe, okay? These guys that are going to answer the bell at a high level year in and year out, in spite of their intentions, just the natural talent and their natural drive. Until you find a couple of those guys, everybody else on the team, they're here until they shouldn't be, and we're rooting for the laundry, okay? That's what we need to be doing.
Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement.
Socks in the basement. Heard everywhere a podcast can be found, and always on socksinthebasement.com.